Brothers, sisters, and friends. First of all, I want to thank the brothers and sisters of the Texas Ecclesias for putting on this fraternal gathering, this period of time for spiritual nourishment and hospitality. Not only is this a well-needed and necessary pause from the world, but a week of edification and fellowship, a gathering of a cross-section of the one body, a group of fellow travelers on the path which is leading to judgment and to the kingdom to be established here on the earth. My responsibility this afternoon is to keep you stimulated enough to induce a discussion on Ecclesiastes chapter 8. This is a difficult task, especially after eating a meal and sitting under a hot tabernacle. Please pay attention. I'm going to give some introductory remarks on Ecclesiastes chapter 8. I'll do a quick dissection of the verses and try to interpret what I think is the central points for us to ponder, and then present some thoughts for discussion. It has been suggested that the book of Ecclesiastes was not written by Solomon at all, but rather a person commissioned to write the words of the king. Of course, popular thought is that the king did not write the book. Many scholars of the Bible have attempted to discredit the inspiration of the entire Bible and have done so throughout the ages. So why not the books of Solomon? The same has been said about the prophecy of Isaiah. Many think that Isaiah did not write the prophecy because there are changes in the method and writing style of the narrative. I wouldn't think this phenomenon was too strange. Why? If you were to read a talk or recitation that I wrote 20 or 30 years ago, when I first was given the responsibility to write or exhort, you would probably see a difference in how I write now and the intent of what I write about. Of course, there could be some changes in time with the text from Solomon, while the focus of what Solomon wanted recorded later in his discoveries of wisdom. Another thing to ponder is that even if Solomon did not pen the words himself, he most assuredly had a scribe that would have been employed to write what the king wanted to have written. The intent of the king was to have the information available for him to reflect on in the future, as well as his thoughts and conclusions preserved for reference as part of his legacy. Ecclesiastes chapter 8 appears to be divided into three parts. The first, verses 1 through 5, appears to be a conclusion of a discussion that had taken in a previous time. It could also be a dialogue or a process of thought taking place in the king's mind and penned to show his thought process, like doing the math and doing the calculations on a piece of paper. Verse 1, who is as the wise, and who knows the meaning of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face to shine, and the boldness of his face shall be changed. Ah, now I get it. How do I feel when all of a sudden what you have been struggling for comes clear, and you finally understand? Your whole countenance can light up and glow, and you can become exuberant, and of course you want to tell everybody. Brother Sid commented yesterday that searching a matter takes time, but by zooming out of the subject and taking a look in a different way can help one finally get it, and it is the exhilaration of knowing the meaning that makes the face shine. Keep the king's words, because of the oath of God. When given the opportunity to have anything, Solomon requested wisdom. So the oath of Yahweh was fulfilled so that Solomon got the gift of wisdom. 1 Kings chapter 4 and verse 29. And God gave Solomon exceeding great wisdom and understanding and largeness of heart, even as the sands that are in the seashore. Verse 3. Do not be hasty to leave the presence nor take a stand in evil things, for he does whatever he pleases. You have a king that has been appointed by Yahweh and given wisdom. The king was sanctioned by Yahweh. Don't abandon him. Don't discredit him when you feel his decisions are not as you want, or that you think are right, are not right, or rather enjoy the cloak of security that he offers by his power and strength, especially when encouraged by and directed by Yahweh. Don't choose to abandon allegiance to the anointed king because you see or hear that he has put forth energy to try things that you would not be able to do yourself or even deem appropriate. Trust the king, as he will justly, through tried wisdom, do the right thing. As we know, the only one that did this totally, righteously, was Christ. Look at the next verses. Because the word of the king is that which hath power, and who may say to him, what are you doing? This thought may have occurred in relation to Solomon, but is inconceivable in relation to Christ. Finally, in this part, verse 5 presents a summation of the thoughts above. Verse 5, whoever keeps the command shall feel no evil, and a wise man's heart knows both time and judgment. It's tough when you get a cloud of dust coming in your throat. A wise man knows when and where to act. He not only does the right thing, but he does it at the right time. Not too harshly, and of course, not tardily. Look at the example that Christ used to teach his message. The foolish virgins waiting for the bridegroom tried to do the right thing, just as have the wise virgins, Matthew chapter 25, but they were not prepared, the unwise virgin, they were not prepared ahead of time, and then it was too late, and the door was shut upon them. How about Esther? She, by contrast, thought carefully as to the appropriate time and place to put her petition to the king, and of course we know that she was successful. The second part of this chapter starts with verse 6 and goes to 14. Here is the discussion of the time and energy spent thinking about justice and justification. Why are there contradictory outcomes in relation to justice when it is clear that the result should be different? Verse 6, for there is a proper time and procedure for every matter. This is a continuation of the thought process throughout Ecclesiastes. There is a time and purpose, a time and procedure, a time and appropriateness for everything, especially anything that is important. Verses 7 through 9 reflect on the justification of justice, the uncertainty of what and how one's life will end up or even end. There are no guarantees of the length or quality of life during our trial period. We were reminded about the trials that Job endured and the accusations of his friends. The accusations, however, were not the intent of his trials. It was the testing and proving of a man's righteousness. The outcome of our journey, our trial period, is what we do with that dash between our birthday and the day of our death. The book of record is open while the dash has no date after it. We have the opportunity to adjust the outcome. We have the obligation to identify and recognize that which needs to be changed and have this opportunity only until that record book is closed. At that time, we can no longer alter or change our individual outcomes. That will be made clear at our judgment. And this happens after the dash when we are called from the grave to judgment, or when the knock at the door is heard if Christ returns while we are alive. Verse 9. So all that I saw as I applied my mind to everything done under the sun, everything that was pondered was applied to everything that was done under the sun, while alive, while awake. Verses 10 through 14 deal with the negative outcome of evil. There is sometimes something else meaningless that occurs on earth. Righteous men who get what the wicked deserve, and wicked men who get what the righteous deserve. This too, I say, is meaningless. People saw the wicked buried. People were upset when the wicked did not have swift sentencing for crimes. Wicked live long and prosperous lives. This is what was identified through observation and what was interpreted through the complaints of the people. But the crux of the matter remained wrapped in the wisdom that their longevity and prosperity is only for a short time. They are without God in the world, and therefore not heirs to the promises. They have their reward now. Third part is verse 15 through 17. This presents the positive aspect of what this life is about. Whether what we have been given is a trial or a blessing does not matter. It's how we manage it, deal with it, or have assistance through the trial that will count. It was brought out in discussion yesterday that maybe riches, that which makes life living easy, could be a method to destroy the possessor, and that riches are really a trial. Verse 15, so I commend the enjoyment of life, because nothing is better for a man under the sun than to eat and to drink and be glad. Then joy will accompany him in his works all the days of his life God has given him under the sun. This is a summation and conclusion of the reality that is, in a sin-cursed world, there is much of human existence marked by relative futility. Since the righteous man cannot assume that he will automatically experience temporal prosperity and blessings on the earth, he should, at the very least, enjoy every day to its fullest as a gift from God. But it should be pointed out that the temporal enjoyment in this life does not preclude the faithful anticipation of the infinitely greater joy of the age to come. In fact, it may enhance the legitimate enjoyment that might be derived from this life. For the wise man will take that joy for what it is, a gift from God, the best that he can offer now, but he will not set his whole heart upon it and the only joy to be had. Verse 17. Then I looked at all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is under the sun, because though a man labor to seek it out, yet he shall not find it. Yea, further, though a wise one speaks of knowing, yet he shall not be able to find it. Solomon tried and found out that all is vanity. All is vexation in the negative aspect, unfruitful, except he found that some things are born of righteousness, and that becomes the responsibility not to be challenged like vanity and vexation. The whole discovery process was not done in one day. Rather, it took a lifetime. Ecclesiastes is a journal of what the king uncovered through trial and what he deduced through wisdom. The sum was that all things are vexation and a waste of time when not used for or dedicated to the honor and glory of Yahweh. Not everything is a benefit to man's righteous being. All things are God-given, but are to be used to enhance the life dedicated to righteousness. So prove all things. Hold fast to that which is good. Brothers and sisters, what is it that Solomon wanted us to understand? He deduced that everything can be vanity, a wisp of air, and a vexation to the very being of man. I want to say that this is true if not applied appropriately. Wisdom is only as good as how it is applied, how it is used, and how it is incorporated into our lives. We need to remind each other what vanity and what vexation to our righteous walk is. Moderation may not be enough. You may have to turn off the TV and not just cut down its use. You may have to try and read with someone else rather than by yourself. You can use the telephone or even the Skype program. We have been encouraged to visit to care for the fatherless and the widows. This may be done today in alternative ways that benefit all involved. Wisdom of the truth centers on steadfastness and righteous spiritual righteousness. Think of what I can do, the way I can assist, or the way I fit into the one body. Solomon gave us a pattern and a process. Jesus encouraged us because we are to assist each other. Preparation is being made for us to reign as kings and priests. In order to be prepared, we need to understand that we are one. Brother Philip said yesterday that we cannot do it on our own, and we cannot do it alone. We can make our face change and shine when we are sharing the burdens of this life with those traversing that path towards the kingdom. We have been given what we have to use appropriately, as Christ explained in the parable of the talents. We have what we have to use, not pack away and save without usury. To be seeking more and striving for more is vanity and will be vexation of spirit. Enjoy what we have and use it to demonstrate honor and glory to Yahweh, because that is what we need to do, what we should want to do as we move Zionward.